Welcome to Artery with Robert Simpkins and Isa Kavejia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In season three of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist specializing in a particular cultural context has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of voice and authorship in art. Today's episode is a departure from our usual format in some ways, as the author whose work is discussed is not directly present. I hope this spiked your interest. In this episode, Eduardo Kirikimo, a social anthropologist and computational neuroscientist, speaks with Elsa Sicute Micalointe, who is a research associate at the Department of Psychology at the University of Cambridge, and focuses on experimental philosophy of aesthetics, among other things. In today's episode, they explore the authorship of AI.
Hi, my name is Eduardo Kirikimo, and I'm joined with Dr. Elsa Sicute Micalointe. I'm a social anthropologist and the laboratory manager for an experimental psychology lab called Body, Mind and Behaviour at the University of Cambridge, England. My personal research areas include, very broadly, ethics, aesthetics and morality from interdisciplinary perspectives. And today I'm excited to talk with Elsa, who is also a research associate with the lab, working on many exciting projects funded by the Templeton Trust, focusing on moral cognition, art appreciation, and aesthetic experiences. Welcome, Elsa.
Thank you so much, Eduardo, for the invitation. Like Eduardo said, I am a research associate in the same lab at the Department of Psychology, Cambridge University. And I currently work on the project Higher Values, Aesthetic Experiences, Transcendence, and Prosociality. In this project, we are exploring the psychological effects of appreciating beauty and art. And we aim to discover whether art and aesthetic appreciation can give rise to an abstract mindset and whether it has an effect on our moral values and moral behavior. The project I'm working on is funded by the Templeton Trust and is part of a bigger Templeton grant strategy called Art Seeking Understanding. It unites many scientists who all investigate one topic. That topic is the cognitive value of art, or to put it simply, how art can be a source of knowledge and understanding. And before coming to Cambridge, I did my PhD in philosophy at Vilnius University in Lithuania. My doctoral work focused on the philosophy of music. I was especially interested in the ontology of musical works. I also did experimental philosophy studies, that is, empirical studies during which I investigated people's intuitions on the identity of musical works. What does it mean for musical work to be the same or two distinct musical works? And I was also interested in other topics in experimental philosophy of aesthetics, such as the full concept of art and people's intuitions on AI-created art. And before studying philosophy, I was also a violinist.
Thank you. So for this conversation, we'll be talking specifically about AI-generated art. And for this, I would like to quickly introduce a very famous artwork generated by AI or artificial intelligence in 2018, entitled Edmond de Bellamy. Edmond de Bellamy is an artwork that resembles a classical oil portrait of a man donning an 18th century style coat whose features are distorted and blurred. The painting, set within a gilded wood frame, suggests a mimicry of traditional European portraiture. The man, whose visage is an illegible blend between three-quarter view and frontal view, is left incomplete, and few details help distinguish between his facial features and between his bright white collar and coat. In the bottom right corner, a long, peculiar mathematical equation written in cursive font signs the painting, both a nod to the function that helped produce it and a signature from the algorithm itself. It's said that the painting was generated by a machine learning algorithm that took some 15,000 portraits inspired by 14th to 19th century artwork. However, controversy hit when it was revealed that the Parisian organisation and art collective who had produced the artwork, called Obvious, had not appropriately credited the software package that they had very slightly repurposed from a 19-year-old AI artist and technologist. But the controversy doesn't stop there. It was subsequently sold at the Christie's art auction for a staggering $432,500, none of which was actually awarded to the team technologists or even the machine learning researchers. It all went to the Parisian Art Collective, obvious. So, with this, what is AI-generated artwork? Who, what is generating or authoring it? Does it even really count as art if there is no clear human proprietor? Does our language reflect and perhaps influence how we perceive AI-generated art? And is this even important? Who should be responsible for such art? These are the types of questions we hope to tackle in this podcast.
Here is the problem. Like you, Eduardo, mentioned the case of Edmond de Bellamy. Can we actually say that AI created art? If there was a large human team made of artists and machine learning experts that were involved in the process of the creation of Edmond de Bellamy? And in general, what does this question even mean? Can AI create art? I think we should consider three aspects here. First, we should talk about the definitions of art. What is art? And then when we know what we're talking about, when we talk about art, we can ask another question. What does it mean to create art? What is creation? And then when we have answers for the first two questions, we can discuss the role of AI involved in the process.
Amazing. So let me pose that first question to you. How might we define art? And perhaps how has the philosophy of art tackled this question?
Oh, actually, the question of the best definition of art has been one of the main questions in philosophical aesthetics in the 20th century. And the candidate list is almost endless. For example, there is the classical Platonic Aristotelian mimetic theory, which holds that artworks must be an imitation of nature, right? To create art is to copy, to imitate something that is external to you. But there is also the expression theory of art, which claims that art must be expressive of the emotions of the artist. So to create art is to express something that you have inside, as opposed to external, natural things. And there are also historical definitions of art. They emphasize the relation between a work of art and some earlier artworks. For example, the philosophers defending historical definitions emphasize an intended resemblance of an artwork to some acknowledged earlier pieces of art. Then there are intentional definitions of art. They stress artists' intentions for an artwork to be regarded in the same way as earlier artworks. Then there is functional view. According to this view, art is defined by its purpose. So there is some specific function that all works of art must embody. There is some human need that art must satisfy or fulfill, for example, such as the need for aesthetic experiences. And there are also procedural institutional definitions of art. They claim that someone with authority in the art world can decide what counts as art and what can't. So there's someone in the museum, art historians or other art professionals who decide purely institutionally what counts as art. But the problem with all these definitions is that they are often seen as too wide or too narrow, so it's easy to find counterexamples, examples of objects that we usually consider art, but they do not satisfy those definitions. But there is one, I would say, striking commonality between most of those theories, not all, but most. And the commonality is the requirement for intentionality. So most of these definitions of art require an artwork to be produced with an intention to create art. It must be the product of an intentional action.
That's very interesting. Let's explore this further. What do you mean by intentionality?
Intentionality. Well, intentionality as opposed to accident, what happens accidentally, right? For example, some creators might incorporate accidental elements in the process of creation. For example, a composer of so-called aleatoric music might roll the dice and, leave some element of the composition to chance, right? You roll the dice and one means E minor or two means D minor or whatever. But the very decision to roll the dice is intentional, right? You have a wish to create a musical work, you desire to create it. You have an intention, you imagine how the result will look like. So in the end, every work of art we encounter is created intentionally. You cannot just, let's imagine a cat walking on the piano and the cat accidentally slips and falls down, it falls on the keyboard, and the sound coming from the piano is nice. And even if it sounds very beautiful, we would not say that the cat who slipped accidentally created a musical work, because this is not how creation happens. It must be intentional. And philosophers almost universally agree that intentionality is one of the most important conditions of creating art. And it follows that art can only be created by someone who is conscious, because you must be conscious to have any kind of intention.
Okay, so it seems that intentionality and consciousness are important aspects of defining art. How have you personally incorporated these, perhaps in your own research?
Yes, I did a study together with my collaborator Markus Knier from the University of Zurich. So we wrote a paper called The Full Concept of Art. In other words, the ordinary concept of art, right? Or how do ordinary people, not art experts, but just ordinary people, decide what is art and what is not art? And in particular, we were interested in three aspects, often emphasized by philosophers who work in the philosophy of art. And these three aspects are three factors, we could say, are intention, beauty, and institutional recognition. So in our study, we presented the participants with vignettes, with scenarios telling about, with stories telling about a process of creating art. And in those scenarios, the participants read about an object created either intentionally or not. When the resulting object is either beautiful or not, and in the end it either receives institutional recognition, such as being mentioned in art history books or exhibited in a museum, performed in concert halls, or it doesn't receive institutional recognition. So we are interested in the role these three factors play in our judgments, what is art? And it turns out that none of these three conditions are necessary. So there are some cases when an object is not beautiful, but people say it's still art. There are cases when it's not institutionally recognized, right? Maybe some piece of art never reaches a museum, but people are still willing to say, yes, this is a work of art. And most surprisingly, there are cases only when the object is beautiful, when people are willing to say that it is art, even if it was not created intentionally, which is an extremely surprising finding, because we discovered that, people are willing to see accidentally created objects as art, which is the opposite of what we could expect after reading literature and aesthetics.
That's fascinating. Thank you. So let's turn back to AI and our Edmond de Bellamy example. And even here, it seems that intentionality and consciousness are somewhat blurred and not really immediately obvious. In fact, the portrait is still considered an artwork. It's selling for a huge amount of money in auctions. But there still remains a debate over authorship and ownership and even responsibility. So what do you make of this in light of the full concept of art and what we've discussed so far?
Yeah, exactly. The role of intentionality is so important here. Again, we know from studies in philosophy, in psychology of art, that when people are asked to justify why they think that something is or isn't art, they often mention such criteria as, is the subject made by a conscious agent or not? Is it intended by its makers to be an object of an aesthetic interest or not, and so on? So we are interested in this problem. Intentionality is so important, consciousness is so important. Wait, but we all know that AI is not conscious, right? It's quite obvious for all of us. So would people be willing to consider AI as an artist if it's not conscious, and if intentionality is such an important criterion? So we run a similar study to the one I just described to you earlier with my collaborator, Markus. And we were interested in three questions. How people see AI-created art. Are they as willing to see it as art as they are willing to see it as art human creations? And are they willing to consider AI creator as an artist? And what is the role of mental states we might ascribe to AI, right? Do people actually believe that AI has an intention to create a work of art? So it turns out that according to people, AI art is as much art as human-created art. But they do not think that AI creators can be considered artists. And this might be related to the fact that people in aesthetic context, when considering cases of art creation, people are not willing to ascribe mental states to AI. In other words, people don't say that AI artist thinks, intends, wishes, believes, and so on. That might be the reason why.
And so in what ways is AI inviting us to perhaps redefine and reattend to these concepts of intentionality, art, and consciousness?
Yeah, I think that the main question AI is raising regarding art is the role of intentionality, as I emphasized many times in this conversation. But I don't think that intentionality should be reconsidered. I mean, it's quite clear we have quite a well-defined concept. I mean, intentionality consists of five elements. In order to do something, an action intentionally, you have to desire to do that action, believe that you are doing. Well, you have to intend to be aware that you are fulfilling the intention, and you also have to have the skill to perform the action. So the concept of intentionality, it consists of these five elements, and I don't think that it should be redefined or reconsidered in any way.
So let's complicate this idea a bit further. It seems there's a somewhat easier relationship, perhaps, between the artwork and the artist, such as the portrait and the painter. But given your research area, what are we to make of music, where there's a composer, a score, and a performance?
Exactly. Musical works, I think, are very different kind of entities compared to paintings, for example, or sculptures. Well, if you were asked to point your finger at a painting, you could do that very easily if it hangs on the wall of the room where you are sitting. But if you were asked to point your finger at a musical work, this would be complicated. Musical works are weird entities. Just think about this. I mean, musical work exists even when nobody in the world plays it. It doesn't have to be played at this moment to exist, right? So it seems that musical works is something more than just the sound you hear. You could try to identify musical work with a score, but you can burn a score, right? You can take a score, the single exemplar of a particular score, you can burn it, but it doesn't mean that you just destroy the musical work. Right? So musical work is something more abstract than that. You cannot just take a simple physical object and say, look, here's what it is. So there's a complicated relationship between the composer, well, at least in classical music and in some other traditions, the relationship between the composer and performers, of a musical work. They all seem to participate in the creation of this work, while paintings are more often the result of one person's creative efforts. So a musical work, I think, is often a result of a collaboration between multiple people, multiple authors, such as the composer, if it's one person, and a performer or multiple performers. It's an artifact, a musical work is an artifact, an object intentionally made by this collective of authors. They have a collective intention. Each of those people might be responsible for different aspects of the musical work. For example, the original composer might be responsible for the harmonic structure of the piece, and then performer might be responsible for the musical instrument that is chosen to perform that piece, and well, and the timbre of that musical instrument. But they all participate, they all have creative intentions, they all create one object, and their intentions have to be fulfilled successfully, right? Not anything counts as a musical work. You have to have a certain idea in your mind what sort of an object you want to create, and your intention must be successfully fulfilled.
So do you think we can trace the ideas and inputs that led to that artwork? So can we liken this middle interface, i.e. the performance of music, to AI?
Well, first of all, I want to say that if we are speaking seriously when we say that AI is an author, that we must also be ready to accept the legal consequences of such position. If we really think that AI is an author, is not merely a tool, and well, the authorship problem is also reflected in the legal discussion on the ownership of the copyrights of artworks produced by AI, generated by AI. And those works are not copyrighted. There are proposals in the literature to assign the authorship to non-human agents to expand the concept of a creative agency and authorship to include non-human agents. Other authors propose to just to transfer the copyrights of robot-created arts to their human authors. But currently, at least the European law considers human AI creators as responsible for the creation of AI-generated art. And it suggests that there is a collective authorship behind the work. And AI itself is not considered responsible. It's not one of the sources of the authorship. And I would say that current AI might be compared to a musical instrument, if you want to keep this musical metaphor, which I like very much. It's more of a tool, not really an agent. And a tool, a musical instrument, is crucial in the process, but AI is neither a composer nor a performer. So in short, I do like your idea about the similarity between musical creation and AI art creation, but I would argue that AI is not one of the authors, it's merely a tool.
Thank you. Let's turn to some more ethical considerations. Perhaps you can speak a bit more about the difference between AI ethics and aesthetics.
Yes, I find the research in the way people perceive AI agents in moral contexts very interesting. For example, psychological research shows that people are very willing to ascribe rich mental states to robots, AI-driven robots, in moral contexts. For example, people think that AI-driven robots can understand the harm they are causing. They can lie. They can have intentions to deceive. And people are willing to blame robots and even to punish them. Why is that interesting? Because, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, it's not the case in aesthetic context, in the context of art creation, where people don't think about AI-driven robots as agents with rich mental states. They're more considered as unconscious tools, I guess. Why is there a difference between the moral domain and the aesthetic domain? Why are these two domains different? I don't know. I think this is a very interesting question, and maybe possible direction for future research. But in any case, whatever people think about AI, we know that it is not conscious, doesn't have intentions. So we must remember that. And still, at the same time, it is interesting to do research to understand how people perceive AI, how people react to such agents.
Just on that, what do you think about the rising concern regarding AI? For example, many fear that it will increase productivity of various types of labour, both in the workplace and even in creative industries, to the point of making jobs redundant.
Yes, of course, we should take those concerns seriously. On the other hand, I also think there might be positive consequences of developments in AI. If some tasks might be achieved more efficiently by using AI, in some cases, this might not be a very bad thing. Of course, we are worried that AI might replace humans and humans might lose jobs because of AI. But in some cases, just replacing part of their task by AI might leave them with shorter working weeks, more free time, and as long as we can ensure that everybody has an appropriate level of income and appropriate number of working hours every week, it's interesting how this will develop.
That's great. And let's go back to AI and our discussions on authorship and even responsibility. Do you think AI has a specific voice as an author? And perhaps how should we assign these ideas and concepts of authorship, ownership, and responsibility to artwork that is generated by machine learning mechanisms?
I think it is very important to discuss the language that we use when we discuss AI and AI-created art. And I think it's necessary to raise awareness that we have a tendency, we all have a tendency to project human traits onto AI. And we tend to use language that is appropriate to describe human actions, also describe AI. And this is sometimes not really appropriate. And this tendency to anthropomorphize AI, it comes, on the one hand, it comes from science fiction, right? The very idea that computers might be conscious, where does it come from? One of the most obvious sources is just science fiction. And it also comes from the way media tends to present recent AI developments. That is, they are using language that should be, in my opinion, should be reserved to describe conscious, intentional agents rather than AI. Of course, this very idea to be willing to consider AI as creators, as authors, the intention is beautiful, right? The intention, I think it belongs to the context of anti-colonialism and the idea that we should decentralize our world to consider a broader spectrum of possible agents as authors. So it has to be not only white men, but also women, and also people of other ethnicities, and not only adults, but possibly also children who do not have intentionality in the same sense as adults do, right? Or maybe even animals. So we broaden the spectrum of beings that might be considered as authors, and the intention is beautiful, but then it also begins to include objects that might not possibly should not be included there, such as computers and AI robots. Why I'm saying that it's not appropriate to include them to the list of possible authors, because they are not conscious. So I think it is really important to be careful when we choose the type of language we use to speak about AI, especially as scientists, scientists who are presenting their discoveries to the general public, especially as journalists, other people who work in media. Because the way we used to describe AI creations, whether we say that it created, it intended, AI decided to create a painting, right? Or on the other hand, we can use words that suggest that AI is merely a tool, right? We can say that an artist used this program to create, right? If we present the process using these terms, it sounds like AI is merely a tool, an object, an unconscious thing. What it is, actually, that's what it is. So I would say that my suggestion how to answer your question of whether AI has a specific voice as an author. In order to answer this question, first we should make clear whether we believe that an artist must be a conscious entity or not, right? That is the main question. And in any case, we must be aware of the vast amount of human efforts in anything that we hear being called AI made art. And there is a reason why AI, who generated Edmond de Bellamy, why it didn't get paid for creating the portrait. It was human artists who shared the money.
This is fascinating. Thank you so much. Let's start to tie these discussions together and think perhaps about how we move forward with AI. So for you personally, how do you think AI will affect your own research?
Actually, I don't know. I think in the context of our conversation today, it's really important to ask those questions. Relevant experts of machine learning. I can only comment as a philosopher, as a scientist who's interested, but I couldn't consider myself an expert of AI. So I personally feel very curious about the future developments AI and the way it will reflect in the society.
And so would you recommend that we should be concerned or excited by the rise of AI and AI-generated art?
We should be curious.
And so finally, what would these discussions mean for our own conceptions of art and even ourselves?
Well, regarding our conception of art, I think it's a good chance to ask ourselves whether art without an artist is possible, whether art without an intention is possible, and how about art without consciousness of the artist, or accidentally created art, how should we think about accidentally created artworks? And regarding our conception of ourselves, I think these discussions on AI art might serve as a chance to reconsider artistic agency and to ask ourselves whether it is exclusively human. And it's a nice option to, a nice chance to reconsider other possible authors.
I think this is a good place to draw our conversation to a close. So I thank you very much, Elze, for this fascinating talk on the increasingly popular issue of AI, authorship and responsibility.
Thank you.
This was Artery with Robert Simpkins and Isa Kavegia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. Thank you for listening. Join us in a fortnight for the next episode in this season on voice and authorship in art.